Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. No, no, never, never. No pressure on you. No, we don't tolerate sponsors, no. Especially the fella that Donald Trump has appointed as Labor Secretary. Is it Labor Secretary? The guy who made the dirty commercials for Carl's Jr. Yes, Trump appointed him as the Secretary of something. Yeah, uh-huh. So we don't do sponsorships just because of stuff like that. What else don't we do? Oh, we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought and as America plunges into the depths of winter, even though it's not officially winter yet and it's freezing. The temperatures dipped 12 below zero here at the McBurney compound last week, and we found ourselves struggling with the question that I think every farmer struggles with at some point. At what point do you bring the livestock in the house? If it's that cold, we didn't bring the livestock in the house, but we did. Well, actually, technically, we allowed the peacocks, the peafowl, into the garage to perch on top of my extremely attractive audio engineer, Sequoia. It's got the rack, you know, perfect for perching peafowl because it was 12 below zero. And I know they're animals, and they generally live outside. I know that, but I think a lot of them don't make it through the winter. I think that happens. So we have chickens now. Their combs are at risk of frostbite. So we put heat lamps in the chicken coop, heat lamps in the goat house. The peafowl hung out on the sequoia in the garage. That's not a fun thing to clean up after, by the way. Not at all. But all the livestock survived the deep freeze. And we think we're prepared for the next one, I think. Yes. We have to set up a special room, maybe. An emergency freeze room for the livestock. But that's all that aside. Let's get right to the news of the day. The big news, the biggest news I heard this past week, was Barry Ho having the opportunity to exercise one of his lifelong dreams. He surrendered the U.S. Army to the Indians. Yes, up in North Dakota at the Dakota Access Pipeline. Yes, Barry Ho surrendered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. According to Breitbart, they will not be granting an easement so that the pipeline can be completed. Instead, they will be undertaking an environmental impact statement and to look at alternative routes for the pipeline. The governor there is quite upset. He says, Barry's surrender does nothing to resolve the issue. It prolongs serious problems faced by North Dakota law enforcement as they try to maintain public safety and keep all the hippies and the Indians and everyone else from freezing to death out there. And he says this prolongs the dangerous situation of having protesters camping during the winter on Corps of Engineers property. This project, he says, has become a political issue rather than one based on engineering science. Engineering science? Since when does that get taken into the equation when you got a bunch of hippies banging on drums and standing up to protect their sacred water and their sacred this and sacred that? Everything's sacred with the pagans. Anything could be sacred. And so anyway, the surrender of the army to the Indians has finally occurred. Another part of Barack Obama's legacy that will be long remembered. And maybe this, too. Maybe. We shall see. From the politics file, the Federal Reserve is threatening to raise interest rates in the coming week. And this story from the French press agency says that this will only be the second time the Fed has raised interest rates in a decade. Now, if you remember the chatter last year, a little over a year ago, The word was the Fed's going to raise interest rates. They tried. They raised rates, I think, a quarter of a point. And the stock market plunged, and the economy was exposed as frail and near collapse. And everybody freaked out, and they stopped that right away. No more rate increases under Barack Obama. But now, as a parting gift to the incoming administration, Ho and his minions at the Fed will raise interest rates this coming week, I do believe. They will. And the question is, can the economy sustain itself with interest rates on the rise? I think not. I don't think so. I think things will look awful and terrible. And although there's been the Trump boom that's happening, and there's no doubt that it's happening. The stock market is up, I think, 1,400 points since Trump won the election. So maybe it's built in. Maybe it drops 500 points, but we're already up. I don't know. I think the economy is a lot weaker than people might think. But then again, the economy is really has a lot to do with people's state of mind. And people think under Trump that we're all going to make more money. People are going to do more business. We're all going to make more money. But Barry Ho will do his best, like a sapper rolling back through the wire, throwing one last bomb as they raise interest rates over at the Fed. I personally don't think interest rates are a moral issue. So I can't say whether they should or shouldn't be raised. I just hope if I have to get a mortgage in the next 6 months that they are not raised, just from my own personal viewpoint. Not that I anticipate getting a mortgage in the next 6 months, but it's possible. And so, there you have it. Barry's parting gift to the incoming administration there. And that takes us to the Queering of America file, where Chip Gaines, well, he didn't quite answer the question about whether or not he was fur or again. Homos getting married. No, he did not. He took to Twitter last weekend after the contrived controversy, contrived by some lesbian and or lesbian sympathizer over at BuzzFeed, demanded to know where they stood on the issue of whether boys could marry boys and girls could marry girls, and walk around in public and expect no one to say anything about it, which is what they want. You can't say anything about it. You have to act like it's normal. In fact, you have to bake them a cake and make them a T-shirt. That's right. Well, she demanded to know whether or not the Gaineses, featured on Fixer Upper on Homo and Gay TV, HGTV, whether or not they were for or against homo marriage. So it was all concocted and contrived as an attack on people who appear to be normal, just normal, decent folks, Chip and Joanna Gaines. And you can't be that anymore. If you're a normal, decent human being, you offend all the deviants and the perverts. And so they want to take away your TV show. That's where we are in America. Well, Chip took to his Twitter, and he said, well, what did he say here? He said, people should be respectful of the BuzzFeed article's author, advice that I am not taking. What else did he say? He said, in times of trouble, you'll find the Gaines family at church. And then he took his family to the church where their pastor, Jimmy Siebert, had notoriously spoken out against homosexual marriage on the day that the Supreme Court issued their opinion that homos should be able to get married, walk around in public, and we should all bow down before them. That's the opinion of the Supreme Court, not my opinion, and not the opinion of Pastor Jimmy Siebert. They say he's come out against gay marriage. I don't think a Christian pastor has to come out against gay marriage. I think it should be assumed that if you're a Christian minister in the pulpit, that you are not that you're against homo marriage, it's just that you endorse the God-ordained marriage that we've all known for 5,000 years. That's all. You're just a normal, decent person. But they say he's come out, and he's called homosexuality a sin. And, while the Gaineses didn't directly address the question, they did go take their seats in the pews at Pastor Jimmy's church. And I suppose that's an answer in and of itself. And it's enough to satisfy me. Let's see here. Do I have... I have a quote here. Who is this from? Ah, yes. HGTV issued a statement. Yeah. HGTV answered questions from Fox News, a Fox local affiliate. They issued a statement saying, quote, "We don't discriminate against members of the LGB community in any of our shows. HGTV is proud to have a crystal clear, consistent record of including people from all walks of life in our series." the Gaines did not return calls from this local Fox affiliate because they frankly don't have to. They can just go to church and act normal.
I know who said that.
Who said that?
I know that guy. Oh,
well, we know which HGTV star actually issued that statement just based on the quality of the lisp. Yeah. All right, but he shall remain nameless because we don't want to get sued. We don't want the homos clamoring, storming the McBurney compound, for crying out loud. All right. Now let's move from that ginned up fake news story. I mean, just the idea that they had to answer that was fake. Now it's a real story, but I like the way the Gaines answered it. They just went to church and sat there and worshiped the Lord and were just normal, decent people, that's all. Now, let's go to where there were not many normal, decent people, as a matter of fact. It's the warehouse in Oakland that was destroyed by fire, where 33 ravers, they gave their lives, or their lives were taken in a horrible, horrible fire. Well, I'll put this story up on the summary there, the blog post from the Daily Mail in the UK, because the images are creepy and eerie. And they remind me of some of the homes I used to hang out with when I was trying to be a rock and roll star back in the early 90s. When you're trying to be a rock and roll star, you run into some weird people. Lots of skulls and candles, just weird things. Oh, yeah. Well, the Daily Mail has images that, well, they say the warehouse is a squalid hellhole, not fit to live in, and people were living there. There was cat urine everywhere. Let's see here. Now, photos on the Art Collective's website, that's what the owner, he advertised the building as an artist collective where you could come and live for about $1,000 a month. You could flop there. The photos on the Art Collective's website show an eclectic and creative space for artists and musicians. Yeah, but the reality, according to the Daily Mail, was a dilapidated, horrific building. There were three other fires there, by the way, in 2014, 2015, caused by faulty electronic wiring and just equipment plugged in. Let's see, there were power cords and extension cords hooked up to extension cords, hooked up to extension cords everywhere. I don't know if I even want to. There was a party held there on New Year's Eve 2014 to 15 I'm just not even going to mention that. Let's see, cat feces, used condoms, junk that was called art was piled high in every room. One resident who was interviewed says life there was hell. It was often freezing cold, water and power were sometimes stolen from neighbors who would get angry and then shut them off. Just unbelievable. And, yeah, the neighbors got annoyed that you're stealing their electricity. Imagine that. So the owner, by the way, as he was pulling his jacket over his head when the cameras came by, proclaimed his love for everyone. I heard him in a very brief interview, very brief, where he said he loved everyone and he cared about everyone and he was so sorry at what happened. Anyway, I'll post the pictures. Take a look at it. It's creepy. It's weird. It's eerie. And here's another sad fact. Almost 10% of the people who died in the rave fire were trannies. Yes, and there's some difficulty. A story here from Breitbart. In the wake of the fire, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender organizations have called on media outlets to refer to trannies by the name and gender with which they identify or identified. in the case of the ones that died in the fire, would be identified. But the reporters have been going by public records and what's on birth certificates and things like that. And that's freaking out the trannies. They're just freaking out. I have a quote here from Scott Wolfcave. I'm sorry. It's Scout Wolfcave. He is an executive director of the Trans Assistance Project and a friend of Pines that's what he's an executive director of a pile of homos and trannies is what he is. And he says, quote, it takes an immense amount of labor on the part of an individual trans person to get people to recognize who you are and to, like, respect who you are. Sometimes you try to leave behind and to have people drag that up in a moment that you can't defend yourself. It's painful. And it's painful for friends of the trans person, unquote, said Scout Wolfcave, who no doubt had skulls and candles in the building before all of the trannies were killed. And we're very sorry that the trannies were killed, but we don't have any problem with city officials calling the trannies what they were, which was they were actually boys and girls, and they were what God gave them at birth. And no, we're not going to flatter their mental illness by referring to them in their deranged tranny pronouns. Yes, it is the Weekly Worldview. And welcome back. We're so glad to have you here. And we move from a dilapidated hellhole piled with perverts, freaks, drug addicts, and just all-around demented weirdos to UC Davis. And CBS in Sacramento is reporting via the personhood file here at the Weekly Worldview. A first-of-its-kind surgery occurred this past week at UC Davis Children's Hospital. It was a fetal surgery. Fetal surgery on a baby boy. What? CBS says the fetus was a baby boy. Well, that implies it's a person. A baby boy? Not a blob of tissue? Not an unviable tissue mass? Not a product of conception? No, it was a baby boy. It appears, let's see here, while developing in the womb, the Bobby Angelus and Kay Saturn's baby, here's a couple, they have different last names, I wonder if they're married, they don't even mention that, we're supposed to just not even notice that, but that's something I notice. Well, while their baby was developing in the womb of, well, I don't know if it's Bobby or Kay, K-H-A-E, what is that? So, Bobby, that could be a boy or a girl. And it's at UC Davis, for crying out loud. Anyway, we assume that this was a heterosexual couple for the sake of just moving on. Their baby was diagnosed with drops, which creates excess fluid in the chest. And the option seemed to be beyond the scope of modern medicine to save the baby boy's life. So at 32 weeks of gestation, doctors made a small incision in the mother's stomach and used a catheter to drain the fluid from the baby's chest. And let's see here. In the last 3 years, they've dealt with infertility, miscarriages, and a stillbirth. And now their baby boy, they named their little boy Matthew, which means a gift from God. And indeed, and so is the gifts that God endowed the surgeons with, and their quick thinking as well, to save this little boy's life. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Let's see. So mom took him home. She's able to put him in his crib. They've got their nursery decorated. And they've had it decorated for several years. And now they can finally use it. Thanks to the quick thinking and the skills of surgeons at UC Davis Children's Hospital. We give a shout out to them and thank them for saving this baby boy, Matthew, who was a baby boy the whole time. Yeah, that's right. An identifiable human being in the womb, a person. After all, do you go to great lengths to perform an extraordinary medical procedure on a product of conception or an unviable tissue mass? No. You do that for a person. And why do you do that for a person? Well, hopefully it's just because you're a decent human being. If you have an opportunity to save somebody's life, you save somebody's life. And that's what the doctors did. And that's a happy story after hearing all about trannies that burned up in that warehouse. You know, you start doubting humanity when you read stories like that. But something like this gives you faith that there are people of faith. I actually don't like that term, people of faith. Hillary Clinton's a people of faith. Yeah. No, there are people who are endowed by their Creator with gifts and who love their neighbor, and they've saved the life of baby Matthew there at UC Davis, and that's just good news. And we don't get a lot of good news around here, so I wanted to report that. Now, some more good news, I think. I think it's good news. Mick Jagger, he's a dad again at the age of 73. Mick Jagger's 29-year-old girlfriend, of course. Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to. He's 73. I mean, how much of a commitment do you want to make? It's his eighth child. Mick Jagger has eight kids, for crying out loud. Let's see, 29-year-old ballerina is the girlfriend, Melanie. Yeah, it's Mick's eighth son, and Mick has five grandchildren. So he has eight children and five grandchildren. How many of them are of childbearing age? He even has a great-grandchild, does Mick Jagger. So I don't know why this story caught my attention. Well, it's just where there's life, there's hope, you know? Mick Jagger. And, there you go. I guess we'll just move on from that. Let's go to the governor. I'm sorry, the governor? Yeah, the governor of the state of Missouri. I'm sorry, the governor-elect. From the domestic tranquility file, we have the governor-elect's wife. She was sitting in her car looking at her cell phone, as people are often wont to do, outside of a cafe near the campus of St. Louis University, when robbers opened her door, shoved a gun in her face, and demanded her valuables, which she gave them. She complied. She gave up her cell phone and her laptop, and she's the governor-elect's wife, for crying out loud. The police have arrested three teens, aged 12, 15, and 19, who just robbed a woman in broad daylight, stuck a gun in her face. Police tracked the phone of another robbery victim that these thugs had victimized. And they found her loot, their loot, I guess. They found her property and other victims' properties in the cars of the 12, 15, and 19-year-old punks. So the governor-elect, by the way, do we have his name here? We don't have his name. His wife's name's Sheena Greetens. Well, the governor-elect there in Missouri is a former Navy SEAL. Says he's thankful to God that his wife lived through the harrowing situation. Yeah, and unfortunately, he was not able to say, and if I get my hands on those punks, I'm going to wring their little necks. But I'm sure that's how he feels. This is just a signpost, another one, as to the lack of fear in the hearts of criminals that they'd stick a gun in a woman's face in broad daylight to steal her phone and her laptop. What do you think motivates a 12, 15, and 19-year-old thug to rob the governor-elect's wife? Obviously, they didn't know who she was, but to rob any woman in broad daylight, shoving a gun in her face. It's because they're not afraid. they know that even if they're arrested and convicted and the whole thing, there's no significant punishment. Go to jail for a while, you know, get free food, free housing, free medical, free legal advice for a few years, and then you're back out on the street. And you can shove a gun in someone else's face and go through the whole thing again and maybe get away with it a few times. And then eventually, you know, there's just no respect for the law because there's no fear of punishment. Case in point, this is from the Knoxville News Sentinel. The fires recently that burned in the Smoky Mountains and Gatlinburg, Tennessee, particularly. Two teenage boys have been arrested. People thought it might be terrorism. I had a conversation with a friend of mine. I said, there's just as good a chance that it's misfit teenage products of the public school that started those fires. There's just as much a chance of that it's Ahmed swearing allegiance to ISIS. It could easily be teenage boys. And sure enough, two teenage boys, age 17 and 15, residents of Anderson County, right there where the fires consumed so much, have been arrested. They were hiking on Chimney Tops Trail in the Great Smoky Mountains Park back on November 23rd, and they were lighting matches and throwing them on the ground. In some of the driest, windiest conditions that part of the country has ever seen, the fire danger was high. People were on alert. And here we have two teenage boys, products of your government schools, walking down the trail throwing matches on the ground. Another hiker, according to the Sentinel, inadvertently caught a picture of them walking away from the trail while smoke rose in the background, and their clothing later led investigators to identify these two teenage punks. So what should be the punishment for starting a forest fire? Well, before you answer that, keep in mind that 14 people were killed in the forest fires. Over 2,400 local businesses and homes were also destroyed. So how do you prevent something like this from ever happening again? Well, it's quite simple. You put the two on trial, and if they're convicted of 14 counts of murder by arson, they should be executed. And then teenage boys, no matter how much angst they have built up in them, no matter how confused they are or stoned or angry at mom and dad, or just rebelling against society and the fine American teenage tradition, well, they won't throw matches on the ground during fire season, and this wouldn't happen again because they would be afraid, you see. But they're not very afraid. In fact, I've got another story here from the Justice File from Meriwether County, Georgia, where CBS reports that accused killer Mina Ellery and three others, listen to why she's in jail. She's charged with killing an 83-year-old woman, Dorothy Dow, back in August. She and two other suspects forced their way into Dow's home, beat her, poured gasoline on her, and then lit her on fire. An 83-year-old woman. Well, now this accused murderer is in trouble for posting selfies of herself on social media. She's laughing, smiling, sticking out her tongue in a post on Facebook as she sits in jail awaiting trial for the murder of an 83-year-old woman who she set on fire. But she has no fear. It's all a joke because the justice system pretty much is a joke. What's going to happen to her? What, she ends up life, free food, housing, and clothing for life? Free showers, free medicine, free legal advice, all of that. So why should she be afraid? Well, she should be afraid because she's going to meet God on the other side, and she's going to meet the woman that she set on fire. So she should be afraid of that. But God has delegated that type of authority to the government to put fear in the hearts of potential criminals. But the government is not exercising the authority they have to put fear in the hearts of criminals. And I think it's because everyone in the justice system, they're all corrupt. I'm probably repeating myself from last week. I'm repeating myself for the last, since 1999, I think. Since I first went on the internet with this podcast in 1999, I think I've been saying the same thing. And it keeps getting worse. Yeah, it keeps getting worse. Listen to this. Dylan Roof, you remember him? He's the fella who shot, let's see, how many people did he shoot? He shot 9 church members in Charleston, South Carolina. When he was interviewed by the police that night, after he was captured, based on police observations of video surveillance of him leaving the building with blood on him, he was asked by the police, "What did you do that night?" He said, "I did it. I guess I killed him, I guess." And he chuckled. And he chuckled about it and he laughed. And that's where the criminals are. They're laughing. He shot these people just as they closed their eyes for a final prayer at Bible study. He opened fire. His defense, according to the Daily Mail, his defense team has largely conceded that he committed the slayings and has instead focused on trying to spare him the death penalty. Yeah, well, good luck with that, because you might spare him the death penalty on this side, but Dylan, you won't be laughing when we get to the other side. We're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. And we continue into the Strong Delusion file. Yes, Strong Delusion file. It was a story from the Washington Post. It is being reported accurately that opioid deaths have surpassed 30,000 for the first time in recent history. An increase of nearly 5,000 deaths in 2015 over 2014. The director of the Centers for Disease Control, Tom says, prescription opioid misuse and the use of heroin are intertwined and deeply troubling problems. Is what they are. Deeply troubling. Tom. Hey, Tom, what do you say? He has absolutely no clue of what to do about the heroin problem, the opioid problem, the OxyContin, the oxycodone, all of that. The director for the CDC is clueless, but he does understand that it's troubling. It's very troubling. More people, listen to this, more people died from heroin-related causes than from gun homicides in 2015. Yes. Homicides, yes, that's good news, right? I don't think it's not good news. But here, drug policy reformers, did you catch that? Drug policy reformers were asked by the editors at the Washington Post what should be done. By the way, drug policy reformers, those are people who want to legalize drugs. That's what they are. They want to reform the policy of drugs being illegal by making them legal. Just to be clear, just so you know who these people are. They say that it's criminalization that's a problem. Well, the criminalization of the drugs, you see, it's a barrier to reversing the growing epidemic of overdoses, you see. Criminalization drives people to the margins and dissuades them from getting help. That's according to the Drug Policy Alliance, which is a pile of homos and drug addicts who want to legalize drugs. In my humble opinion, that's it. He says the chairman of the Drug Policy Alliance says, criminalization, you see, it drives a wedge between people who need help and the services they need. Because of stigma, people hide their addictions from others, and that's
and then they end up dead on the bathroom floor because they couldn't just come out and say, yes, I'm on heroin. It's legal. Celebrate it. Let's have commercials on TV. Let's have drive-thrus. How about that? Maybe the same guy who made all those dirty commercials for Carl's Jr., he can pump up the U.S. economy by having drive-through opioid. Maybe they could put those on the menu at Carl's Jr., for crying out loud. Well, the bottom line here, the takeaway, so to speak, in my opinion, is that the liberal solution to the problem of opioids deaths, not opioid deaths, by the way, heroin-related deaths outstripping gun homicides, their solution is to outlaw the guns and legalize heroin. Yeah, that's bound to help. Bunch of geniuses. You know, that's why this guy's working for a 501c3 in social work, is because he's generally a moron. And he probably couldn't make it in real business. And so he signs up with the Drug Policy Alliance because George Soros is handing out the dough to any moron who will hire lawyers to try to legalize heroin so that we don't drive a wedge in between people. How does criminalization drive a wedge? I think a lot of drug addicts, the best thing that ever happens to them is they get arrested, and it hits them in the face like, oh boy, I'm in trouble. Maybe they clean up their act. I think a lot of young people who dabble in drugs and get addicted for a while, I think a lot of them are saved by being arrested and having the hell scared out of them by landing in jail and possibly going to prison for many, many years. That's what I think. I don't think it drives a wedge between anybody needing anything, as a matter of fact. By the way, I'm not for the legalization of drugs, just to be clear, just in case you weren't sure. Okay, now we have to get to the story that all of the other talk show hosts will be talking about the entire day tomorrow. Okay, mark my words. We put the podcast out here on Sunday night. You may be listening on Monday. And perhaps you've tuned into the other talkers already at some point today. Maybe you heard Laura Ingraham in the morning. And then you caught some Rush Limbaugh, little Glenn Beck. And some, who's the other guy who's just like Rush, except not as talented? Hannity. Maybe you've listened to some Sean Hannity and all of his guests. His many, many, many guests. He has a lot of guests. All of his guests have been talking about this story all day. And we here at The Worldview, we don't get to it until the show's already halfway over because it's not that interesting. But this is the story that will drive the news cycle on Monday, is this idea that the Russians have affected the American election. Yes, yes, I have a story here from Yahoo News. How did I get a story from Yahoo News? Oh, well, I guess it's a legitimate news source. It's as legitimate as any of the others, I suppose, anymore. Two top Republican senators, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, joined Democrats like Chuck Schumer and Jack Reed they've called for an investigation. Yes, we want to investigate the recent cyber attacks that have cut to the heart of our free society, they say. And they say it's the Russians. It's the Russians, and they say they have evidence, and they're upset with Donald Trump because he doesn't believe it. He thinks they're all extremely embarrassed that he beat them. And by the way, he beat Lindsey Graham and John McCain even more so than he beat Chuckie Schumer and Jack Reed and Hillary Clinton. He beat Lindsey Graham and John McCain with a stick. Who do you think's more upset about Donald Trump taking over the Republican Party? Lindsey Graham and John McCain, or Chuck Schumer and Hillary Clinton? I can assure you Mr. McCain is quite upset. And he's been upset ever since Trump called him out as a fairly lousy pilot who got himself shot down over Vietnam. There you go. Uh-huh. Yeah, take that one, Johnny. I'm not impressed. So they're all upset, and they're joining with the Democrats to gin up a story that the Russians... that the Russians are the reason Donald Trump won the election. And the Democrats, Chuck Schumer says, this cannot become a partisan issue. The stakes are too high for our country, says Chuck Schumer and Jack Reed. They issued a joint statement
which in the Democrat Party means they smoked a joint and then they issued a statement. Because the idea that the Russians are the reason that Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton like a drum, it's ludicrous. But the Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, said the hacking was definitely the work of the Russians. It was the Russians, and I'm scared. And I'm more scared now than I was then. Donald Trump's in cahoots with the Russians, him and Vladimir Putin. That's what it is. And they say Trump's willingness to disregard the intelligence community's overwhelming evidence is extraordinarily damaging, just in general. They say it's extraordinary. So, yeah, they say they have evidence that it was the Russians. I seriously doubt they have evidence. Now, do they have evidence that the Russians are hacking? Of course. The Russians are hacking all the time. The Russians have been hacking ever since hacking became something to do. They probably, along with a few 14-year-olds in their mom's basement, they invented hacking. I mean, Edward Snowden lives in Russia, for crying out loud. Of course they're hacking. But are they the reason Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton? It's ludicrous and laughable on its face. And this is Lindsey Graham and John McCain's temper tantrum. And it is their effort to undermine the validity of the most recent election. And it's laughable. And Lindsey Graham and John McCain are pathetic. They should resign and just admit that they're losers. In fact, they should resign and send Donald Trump a letter begging him to appoint their replacements. Because even if he threw a dart at a phone book taped to the wall, he could find someone better than either one of these two bozos. And by the way, that'd be a better way to pick the president. Yeah, grab a phone book, open it to a random page, Velcro it to a wall, and throw a dart at it. Whoever it hits, that's the president. It would be far better than what we've just been through. Our pastor at Denver Bible Church has been preaching for the last 3 or 4 weeks on an alternative to the democratic process. And it's invigorating and enlightening to hear because there is a viable alternative. But the whole world, they worship democracy. It's almost a religion, democracy. And to say that democracy is an unstable, immoral way to choose our leaders, well, that's heresy. That's heresy in the modern secular and the modern Christian world. They all worship democracy. Well, I don't. I don't think any of you people are qualified to choose who governs me. And in fact, I don't think I'm qualified either. I don't think I'm qualified to choose who rules over you. And so, you know who I think is qualified? I think God is qualified. And he's laid out a method by which we could avoid all this and not end up with the likes of a self-absorbed strip club owner taking over the country in the name of conservatism. I mean, how embarrassing is this? Maybe this will get some people to finally look at this idea of democracy. With Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton rising, bubbling to the top of the cauldron, maybe people will seriously look at the idea of ditching the whole democratic elections, the whole thing, the campaigns, the TV commercials. It's making me crazy. It's making me sick. There's got to be a better way. And if you want to find out if there's a better way, you got to come down to Denver Bible Church or subscribe to the sermons that our pastor puts out, and you can find out that there is a better way. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. Got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. Weekly Worldview. Welcome back as we round third and head for home. Yeah, welcome back. Welcome aboard and all that, yes. Got to shake that one off, boy. That one, it just hits you right in the face. You know. Yeah, it's like a Russian hack. Pow! Just right there. Now, speaking of hitting you in the face, can you imagine if you took your significant other or perhaps one of your children to the Bulls game last Thursday night? Well, let's just imagine that. I can't imagine it. I can't imagine going to a National Basketball Association game, but for those of you who might do such a thing, ponder sitting there with your 15-year-old daughter and your 9-year-old son and your 7-year-old son or daughter or whatever you got. You're just sitting there. You want to watch a basketball game. You paid your money. You got the popcorn, the soda pop, and you're sitting up and it's a halftime, and out comes the Lovables. That's some kind of act, you know, the halftime act. And Benny the Bull, the mascot, right? And the kiddos all look up because, hey, it's Benny the Bull. It's the mascot. And what the mascot is doing is he's escorting a couple of queers to center court where they propose to one another. A couple of homos at center court with Benny the Bull just to make sure the kiddos are paying attention. And this pair of queers propose to one. Now, this happens, see, in sports. It's quite it's tradition for there to be marriage proposals. It's gone on for a century. During the seventh inning stretch, a guy will ask the woman to marry him on the Jumbotron. Halftime of the football game, halftime of the basketball game. This goes way back. And now it's been utterly corrupted and defiled. Well, I shouldn't say now. Because a pair of lesbians, they did the same thing at an Atlanta Hawks game in December of 2015. Yeah. One sports writer posted, well, it should just be a matter of time before we see more of these type of things across the country. Back to you, Sam. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's just a matter of time before we see more of this. It's just, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. Because once you allow open sexual immorality to become pervasive, well, there's no bottom to how low it'll go and what might happen at center court at the Bulls game. Okay, don't think too much about that, but what could happen at the half court, at center court at the Bulls game, it gets even more lurid and more disgusting as every year goes by. And it all started with a lesbian at the Hawks game, and now we got a pair of fags at the Bulls game. I can just imagine, I hope that there were some normal people in the audience that were disgusted by that. I hope there's someone who walked out of the arena in disgust with their hands over their child's eyes for crying out loud. All right. Just disgusting. Let's talk a little bit more about domestic tranquility, I suppose. Try to recover from that. And I just want to erase that out of your mind. Let's see. Can I go to a story that's not... I can't do that. Well, let's do this from the politics file. Gloria Steinem is still alive. I did not know she was still living, but she is. Now, that proves that God is merciful. She's a feminist who has, I don't know if she's an out lesbian, but she's founded Ms. Magazine in 1972, burning the bras, Equal Rights Amendment, the whole thing. My uterus is my, keep the government out of my uterus. I want to be able to kill my baby. That Gloria Steinem has led the effort to destroy American womanhood and to kill 50 million people. Gloria Steinem has blood on her hands for at least 50 million people who've been murdered since she started advocating abortion back in the early 70s. Well, she's planning a march on Washington January 21st, the day after Donald Trump takes office, and she's absolutely freaked out about that Donald Trump is,
Somehow she thinks Donald Trump is going to do something to interfere with her ability to kill her children, although I think she's too old to have children now. For her ability to kill her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, she's freaked out. She's calling on women to create a tax resistance movement where women will take the part of their income tax that should go to Planned Parenthood and send it directly to Planned Parenthood, and then put a note on their IRS tax return telling the IRS, come and get me. So all of you people who are, you're working to defund Planned Parenthood, you can't defund Planned Parenthood because you've got rabid, very rich liberals who will fund Planned Parenthood no matter what. The only answer is to advocate for the personhood of the unborn child. That's the only way we can stop Planned Parenthood. If the child's a person, which they are, all of them, the boys and the girls, they're all persons. And that's how you stop Planned Parenthood. But what you don't do is participate in this. I think it's called a false dialectic, where you've got people like Gloria Steinem standing up saying they're terrified of Donald Trump. Donald Trump standing up and say, I love Planned Parenthood. They do great things. And all the moronic evangelicals and Christians line up behind Donald Trump because, well, Gloria Steinem's against him. But he's not going to do anything. He's not going to appoint any judge who believes in the right to life. We don't have any now. We don't have a single judge that believes in the right to life. And we shall not after 4 or 8 years of Donald Trump. But the supposed left is going to argue and fight with Donald Trump every step of the way, as they more perfectly regulate the slaughter of millions of innocent people over the next 4 or 8 years. And I just ask you, as an audience member of the Weekly Worldview, don't participate in this false dialectic, because it's all a lie. They're all bad. And if you feel like you have to stand up and root for Donald Trump, well, just don't do it on this issue. We'll find other issues that we can give Donald Trump credit for. But the wholesale murder of innocent people, Donald Trump is not going to help us solve that in any way. And to assume that he is, it's just foolish. That's all. It's just foolish. So Gloria Steinem lives. So let's see here. In Germany, I've got a report from the French press agency that the Free Evangelical Church in Germany has a program by which they are converting Muslims to Christianity. So a Muslim comes to the fodder, or whatever they are, at the Free Evangelical Church there in Germany, and they say, I'd like to be a Christian. Well, you know what they do at the Free Evangelical Church? They put the Muslim into a program that takes about a year for them to officially become a Christian and get baptized. Yeah, over the course of their preparations, which last nearly a year in this particular diocese, potential converts are encouraged to weigh their own motivations. I don't understand this. If you got a Muslim comes to our church, he says, I'm thinking I'd like to convert to Christianity. Well, we start witnessing with him, tell him about Jesus Christ, and hey, if he'll say the prayer, we'll say it right there, same day. Same day right there at Denver Bible Church. That's right. What are your motivations? I really don't care what your motivations are. Maybe you're scared. Maybe you're afraid that you're going to get your head chopped off, and that's your motivation for thinking about maybe I should become a Christian. Well, let me tell you about him, and then if you want to pray, let's pray together, and you can become a Christian. I'm not going to question your motivation. Maybe it was fear to begin with. I know I became a Christian because at first I was scared of going to hell. When I was a little kid, that scared me. And then later in life, if I really was a Christian, I don't really know when I became a Christian. But I know that my initial interest in becoming a Christian was because my life was falling apart. I was afraid I was going to die or go to jail. So those aren't the purest of motivations. But it took, because the story of Jesus Christ is so powerful that even people with bad motivations, the story itself, the person of Jesus Christ, overwhelms whatever their motivations might be. So I would just say to this church in Germany, if the Muslims come and they want to become Christians, don't make them wait a year, for crying out loud. Just get on with it.
So anyway, nearly 900,000 Muslim asylum seekers arrived in Germany in 2015, and a handful of them have been converted to Christianity, because a lot of them probably looked at the program and they're like, "Well, I don't want to go through all that. I was just hoping to, hear the gospel. Somebody told me that Jesus died for my sins, and that I won't get my hand chopped off for stealing, and I don't have to mutilate my daughter, and I want to look into that." Anyway. So, but the church in Germany, I mean, who can imagine the state that the church in Germany is in? I'm sure there are very few Christians in that particular church. Hence, they need the long program, because they don't really know what they're doing anymore. I have a feeling. Let's stay on the Muslim subject, to the war file. It's quite possible terrorists could be using British welfare benefits to fund their extremist activities. Why is that? Well, it's because there are welfare benefits. Welfare benefits, by their very nature, are abused, because they are, in fact, an abuse of people by the government. And now, well, it's really coming back on the British government in spades. Yes, the abuse they've handed out through welfare over the decades in their socialist welfare state that has abused and demoralized and diminished their citizens. Well, now it's fueling the terrorists who want to destroy England. But there's been calls for a thorough investigation. A thorough investigation into the misuse of British welfare funds. Two men were convicted of channeling thousands of pounds of fraudulent housing benefits to the Islamic fanatics behind the Paris and Brussels attack. I think we reported on this, that these guys were on welfare. Some of their helpers were on welfare. Fraudulent housing benefits. The term housing benefits is fraudulent in and of itself, unless you provide them for yourself. For crying out loud, it's unbelievable. They go through the story of the various terrorists and how much money they had. Despite being foreign nationals, these Muslim migrants, or whatever you want to call them, they're legally entitled to child, housing, and tax benefits the day they land on the shores of England. Why is that? Because the people in England are obviously mentally deranged. Nobody should be entitled to government benefits for anything. I'm sorry. Let's see. And then they go through all the other terrorists, all the examples. Yeah. Yep, heard all that, seen all that. If we would just get rid of the welfare and then strike fear into the hearts of the terrorists so that they wouldn't even venture out of their tents or their caves. They would be in such fear if we had a just government that knew what they were doing. All right, now, finally, from the domestic tranquility file, from Chicora, Pennsylvania, 33-year-old, this is from the Associated Press, 33-year-old Joshua Crawford is in jail on charges of criminal homicide and aggravated assault. He and his wife, 30-year-old Sarah Crawford, were having an argument at home last Sunday night when he told her he was going to take his own life. "That's it," he said, "I'm going to kill myself." Well, the gun would not fire, and his wife started making fun of him. She continued to call him names and urged him to please shoot himself. So when he got the gun jam cleared, he turned the gun on her and killed her instead. And now he is in jail, and she is dead of a gunshot wound to the chest. And that's just the state of domestic tranquility in America under a justice system that's a joke. And a government that doesn't know how to help people learn to love each other. They just don't know how to do it anymore. They're just too corrupt. But that's why we're here, to call your attention to all this and to help us all figure out a way forward. I'm Doug McBurney. Thanks for being here. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly World View Studios. Until next week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.